Vi. Bore the imputed sin and guilt of the world. Christ bore the guilt of the sins of the world. Our sufficiency is found only in the incarnation and death of the Son of God. He could suffer, because sustained by divinity. He could endure, because he was without one taint of disloyalty or sin. He, Christ, took human nature, and bore the infirmities and degeneracy of the race. It would have been an almost infinite humiliation for the Son of God to take man's nature, even when Adam stood in his innocence in Eden. But Jesus accepted humanity when the race had been weakened by 4,000 years of sin. Like every child of Adam, he accepted the results of the working of the great law of heredity. What these results were is shown in the history of his earthly ancestors. He came with such a heredity to share our sorrows and temptations, and to give us the example of a sinless life. Satan in heaven had hated Christ for his position in the courts of God. He hated him the more when he himself was dethroned. He hated him who pledged himself to redeem a race of sinners. Yet into the world where Satan claimed dominion, God permitted his Son to come, a helpless babe, subject to the weakness of humanity. He permitted him to meet life's peril in common with every human soul, to fight the battle as every child of humanity must fight it, at the risk of failure and eternal loss. Wondrous combination of man and God. He might have helped his human nature to withstand the inroads of disease by pouring from his divine nature vitality and undecaying vigor to the human. But he humbled himself to man's nature. God became man. In our humanity, Christ was to redeem Adam's failure. But when Adam was assailed by the tempter, none of the effects of sin were upon him. He stood in the strength of perfect manhood, possessing the full vigor of mind and body. He was surrounded with the glories of Eden, and was in daily communion with heavenly beings. It was not thus with Jesus when he entered the wilderness to cope with Satan. For 4,000 years the race had been decreasing in physical strength, in mental power, and the moral worth, and Christ took upon him the infirmities of degenerate humanity. Only thus could he rescue man from the lowest depths of his degradation. Clad in the vestments of humanity, the Son of God came down to the level of those he wished to save. In him was no guile or sinfulness, he was ever pure and undefiled, yet he took upon him our sinful nature. Clothing his divinity with humanity, that he might associate with fallen humanity, he sought to regain for man that which, by disobedience, Adam had lost for himself and for the world. In his own character he displayed to the world the character of God. He for our sakes laid aside his royal robe, stepped down from the throne in heaven, and condescended to clothe his divinity with humility, and became like one of us except in sin, that his life and character should be a pattern for all to copy, that they might have the precious gift of eternal life. He was born without a taint of sin, but came into the world in like manner as the human family. Harmless and undefiled, he walked among the thoughtless, the rude, the uncourteous. Christ, who knew not the least taint of sin or defilement, took our nature in its deteriorated condition. This was humiliation greater than finite man can comprehend. God was manifest in the flesh. He humbled himself. What a subject for thought, for deep, earnest contemplation. So infinitely great that he was the majesty of heaven, and yet he stooped so low, without losing one atom of his dignity and glory. He stooped to poverty and to the deepest abasement among men. Notwithstanding that the sins of a guilty world were laid upon Christ, notwithstanding the humiliation of taking upon himself our fallen nature, the voice from heaven declared him to be the Son of the Eternal. Though he had no taint of sin upon his character, yet he condescended to connect our fallen human nature with his divinity. By thus taking humanity, he honored humanity. Having taken our fallen nature, he showed what it might become, by accepting the ample provision he has made for it, and by becoming partaker of the divine nature. He, Paul, directs the mind first to the position which Christ occupied in heaven, in the bosom of his Father, he reveals him afterward as laying off his glory, voluntarily subjecting himself to all the humbling conditions of man's nature, assuming the responsibilities of a servant, and becoming obedient unto death, and that death the most ignominious and revolting, the most shameful, the most agonizing, the death of the cross. The angels prostrated themselves before him. They offered their lives. Jesus said to them that he would by his death save many, that the life of an angel could not pay the debt. His life alone could be accepted of his Father as a ransom for man. Jesus also told them that they would have a part to act, to be with him and at different times strengthen him, that he would take man's fallen nature, and his strength would not be even equal with theirs, that they would be witnesses of his humiliation and great sufferings. Amid impurity, Christ maintained his purity. Satan could not stain or corrupt it. His character revealed a perfect hatred for sin. It was his holiness that stirred against him all the passion of a profligate world, for by his perfect life he threw upon the world a perpetual reproach, and made manifest the contrast between transgression and the pure spotless righteousness of one that knew no sin.